Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and you're listening to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. From maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest this week is Stuart Lawler, Head of Content Creation and Business Development Manager for Sight and Sound Technology Ireland. Hello, Stuart, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Toby. It's lovely to be with you. I've been listening to Tracks of My Life for the last couple of weeks, and it's a great show. I'm very honoured to be a part of, after hearing some of the guests you've had, very honoured to be on the show with you today.
Stuart, was it a bit of maybe a tricky task just selecting seven tracks then?
Yeah, I think you got in touch with me quite a while ago, and I must apologise because I think you had to prompt me a few times to remind me where are your tracks. And it's funny you say it. I talked to a couple of friends that I'm doing this thing for, where you have to pick seven tracks for a show. And it's kind of talking about, you could have picked, I suppose, I guess like everybody else, all your other contributors have said, you could have picked so much more. But I think what I have picked kind of, sort of symbolizes some key parts, some key moments in my life. But yeah, it was very tricky.
And your first track is one by ABBA, and it's Waterloo, which launched their career at the Eurovision Song Contest. And also, it's a starting point of your life when you were born too. But before we talk a bit about your love of Eurovision and also your connection with the contest too, would you be able to tell me a bit of what life was like for you growing up in Ireland? What was family life like for you?
I have twin sisters, so I'm the eldest of three. My twin sisters are younger than me. I was born in 1974, Toby, the year that ABBA won for Sweden. So you've got my age there. In rural Ireland, in a place called Kildare, near Dublin, about an hour from Dublin on the east coast of Ireland, we were living about 6 miles from the nearest town. My parents were farmers. My dad was a fruit farmer. We didn't have, they worked very, very hard. And I think all three of us would say from that we've a very strong work, an appreciation, I suppose, of work and what work is. But I suppose growing up I was obviously totally blind. I was born blind, and my twin sisters are fully sighted. They were born in the end of 1977. I think, many people will say it, and I would probably say it too. Growing up, I was kind of treated the same as everybody else, and my parents didn't really know what else to do and didn't have a lot of time to try to find out, So they did their best and treated me the same as everybody else, as the others. I kind of mucked in with everyone, and I went to boarding school when I was 6 years old to a school for the blind in Dublin. With all the best will in the world back then in 1980 in rural Ireland, for me to go to mainstream school just wouldn't have been possible. So going to boarding school and getting the education I did, as I look back on it today, chatting to you, it was a no-brainer.
And Ireland has obviously had a bit of a track record with Eurovision, not only having won the competition a few times, but also being a platform for Irish music and culture, with a spotlight on the band Hot House Flowers. And of course, we can't forget Riverdance too.
Yeah, I think we hold the record still, just about, for the number of wins. I think just about, yeah.
And Stuart, I believe you were involved with the Irish Eurovision panel for 1995. How did that come about, and what was it like being on the panel?
So it's the weirdest story. Well, it was the weirdest story, strangest story. I was involved. I was doing something. So I was in college at the time. I was 20 in the spring of 1995. I was doing something for RTE, who's our national broadcaster here in Ireland, the equivalent of the BBC, who were doing a radio contest called Skype, would you believe? S-K-Y-P-E. not like the Skype we have nowadays. It was called Song Contest for Young People in Europe. And I can't remember how, but I got involved with that as a juror. and got talking to one of the producers and something about the Eurovision. And I said, God, I wonder, what would it be like to be a jury in the Eurovision? And he said, oh, well, if you're interested, we'll put your name forward. And I kind of forgot about it. And then about 2 months later, I got a call to say, and it was very like, are you available on Saturday week? There wasn't much lead in time. I got about 10 days notice to come to Dublin. Being, what was it like? I remember sitting through the dress rehearsal. The show was in Dublin at the time. It was the year after Riverdance. It was in the Point Theatre in Dublin. We were in RTE, which is about 6 miles from where the show was taking place. We went, sat through the rehearsal, and then I always remember they gave us a lovely meal and copious amounts of alcohol before the show started. So I'm not sure what they wanted us to do by the time the show was on, but it was a very enjoyable day. And, you know, there have been some, Eurovision's cheesy, and but there's been some great musics come out of it as well over the years. And I think people still watch it. I have to say I'm not as big of a fan of it as I was maybe 20 years ago. I think it has, I don't know, it's lost something, but you still find the odd good song.
What is it about ABBA's Waterloo that makes it such a great Eurovision song?
I think it's very, very catchy, isn't it? And it, of course, it has that, it's very short because all the Eurovision songs have to be very, they're very tight on length. And look, there's so much of ABBA's stuff. I've just been listening to their new album, which of course was released about, I think, 2 weeks ago. They've never really lost it, you know. Is it 40 years on, they're back making music, and it's great. And, you know, whether they needed the money or not, I don't know, but they're back making music, and I think it's brilliant. The history book on the shelf is always repeating itself.
Waterloo by ABBA there, and the track that launched their career too. Stuart, we are now going to a track that marks a holiday for you and memories of a family holiday in Portugal. And I think it was in 1995 too, and I think you must have been at the age of 21 then. 21 can be a bit of a big milestone for people. And I wondered, was that the same for you?
Yeah, it sounds like 1995 was a bit of a year for me, doesn't it? So I suppose I turned 21 in July of 1995. And Toby, I was going through at that time, and I don't mind sort of saying it because I was telling you a couple of minutes ago that I went to school in Dublin. I went to a school for the blind, so I was boarding. And there were great, obviously huge advantages about that. But the big disadvantage was that when I came home at the weekends and at midterms and stuff, I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anyone in my community. And the same followed through when I was in college, and as a 21-year-old, I was at home in the summer and probably not having a huge amount to do, if I'm being honest, and kind of, you know, not seeing a whole lot of people. Outside of my family. And listen, you know, when you have adults, everybody living in the one house, you know, sometimes tensions can be a little bit high. And I think that may have happened sometimes as well for us. But Elton John and your song, which is the one that we're going to play, is one of those, I don't know, I just remember I had an Elton John Greatest Hits double CD around that time. I remember playing that song a couple of times, and it was the only one I could sort of sing in karaoke. I wouldn't like to sing it now, but I sang it on a family holiday when we were in Portugal. But I think Elton John is a master musician, a master pianist, an amazing singer. And his collaborations with Bernie Taupin, of course, all through the years have brought us so much music, and he's still doing it. And the lockdown album he did with, he collaborated with a whole load of people in the last 6 months that they just released there recently. He's an amazing musical genius, and I suppose I wanted to pick something of his.
Did you have your life sort of planned out at all at that age? Because 21 for me, I think I may have had ideas and a plan of what I was going to do, and that obviously changed a little bit during my life, but sometimes I still think that I'm back at 21.
Yeah, it's funny. I when I was 21, I thought I wanted to be a sound engineer. Maybe I would have liked to do what you're doing now, Toby, in some respects. And when I graduated from college, And I was graduating in 1997 with a music qualification. I was interested in music technology and sound engineering as well, but it was around the time when everything was switching from kind of analog to digital, although it had probably started to switch quite a while ago. But it was really switching with quite a pace at that time. And we didn't have the accessibility tools that we have nowadays. You know, you talk about programs like Reaper or, you know, SoundForge or Studio Recorder, any of the things that we all use nowadays. We didn't have that kind of stuff back then. And I suppose our technology and screen reading functionality just wasn't the same. So did I have my life mapped out? Maybe I thought I did. I thought I had when you're 21, you think you have the world sorted. And then, you know, life throws you lots of curveballs. So, yeah, it was definitely different.
What does this Elton John track bring back to you of those memories of that holiday in Portugal?
Oh, right. So there was a bar in the resort we were, which I'm frantically trying to think of the name of, Praia da Rocha in Portugal on the Algarve. And the bar was called the Quizero. And there was karaoke there every night. And it was a bit of crack. It was great fun. So I just remember the Cruzeiro, and it was the only song I could sing. It was the only song I knew all the words to.
My gift is my song, and this one's for you. And you can tell everybody this is your song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done.
Your song there by Elton John, and one that you have been known to sing at karaoke nights too, there, Stuart.
I wouldn't sing it again, but there you go.
We're now going to step back a bit, Stuart, and to boarding school, as you mentioned earlier on. And I think you obviously said you were at boarding school in Dublin, but what was school life like for you at that age?
You know, I've talked about, yeah, going away to boarding school. I think I said to you, it was, you know, it was the only solution, and it was. Doesn't mean it wasn't very hard. And I was only talking to someone a couple of weeks ago about this. I have a very vivid memory of the first day I went to boarding school. I was six. I had turned six that July, went to boarding school in September. And my parents drove me up. It was, at that stage, a bit of a trek, about an hour and a half in the car. It was a Monday afternoon when I arrived up, and I was the youngest there, I think, by about a year and a half. Most of the kids were a little bit older. And they brought me in, and, you know, everybody was there, and they were all very nice, and all the people who were going to be, you know, all the staff there were very nice. But I remember thinking, I can't show how upset I am, because I don't want my parents to be upset, because they're upset enough already. And it's funny how when you're that young, all these things go through your head, that you need to almost support the people who are caring for you in some strange roundabout way, you know?
Yeah.
But outside of that, look, it was sometimes very tough going away from home. I remember after Christmas, you go back to school and you think, why can't I stay at home? And then you kind of get back into it. And look, I made great friends, and I think had great experiences, and got to do things like play music, and, you know, was shown the starts of some of our assistive technologies that I suppose we have today that I just wouldn't have got if I wasn't there. And I'm very grateful for that, and for all the things we got to try that I don't think I would have got to try if I was a sighted kid in a mainstream school.
Stuart, I know you have a family yourself, and I wondered if, you know, we're in different times now than we were back in the 70s and 80s when I was going through boarding school. And I wondered, would you send your own children off to boarding school if that was the best option for them?
So it's a really interesting question. My son is 2.5 and he's fully sighted. I think boarding school, let's take the whole blindness out of it for a sec. I think boarding school really makes you very self-contained. And some people might say that's not a good thing. I believe I saw people when I went to college and I was 19. I saw my peers who were fully sighted almost falling to pieces because it was their first time away from home and didn't bother me at all. And I just wonder, is it good for kids to have a little bit of exposure to that stuff for a little while? Some people come out of boarding school loving it. Some people will come out of it and it will traumatize them for the rest of their lives. Would I send my own son to boarding school? I would find it very, very difficult. But it might be for a year or two. I've seen people who do it for a year or two and then go back home, or who do it the last year or two. I think it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing, and it serves you well for life, for all sorts of things. You learn how to cope a little bit more for yourself. You learn a little bit about teamwork. You learn a little bit about, because the friends you make in boarding school are slightly different to the guys you'll meet, you know, every day in school, I think.
What is the track that takes you back to those boarding school days, and what memories come back to you when you hear this track? Because I think it might be one that's possibly played around Christmas time.
Yeah, it is. I didn't. That wasn't actually, and it's funny when I was thinking of it. So it's The Flying Pickets and Only You. And I remember when this came out, because I don't think, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think this actually came out at Christmas time. For some reason, it's become a Christmas hit, and I'm not sure why. I'm sure one of your listeners will email us in and tell us. I remember lying in a dorm, and I think I was maybe nine. I was 8 or 9. So this might have been 1983. And The Flying Pickets, Only You, had come out. And just hearing that, and it was, we all thought it was a great song at the time, because it's all vocal, isn't it?
Yes.
So yeah. There's no, they're doing everything vocally. They're like the House Martins. That was another band around the same time. And it's still, I hear it, as you say, it seems to have become associated with Christmas. I hear it at Christmas now, and it's a great song. Ba-da-da-da, 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 ba-da-da-da.
The Flying Pickets there, and Only You, and that track that I think takes us all back to Christmas time in the 80s. Stuart, we're now coming to college life for you, and your next track is also one that I think was played out on the playlist of a community radio station in Dublin that you were on. What was your sort of student or college life like for you, and how did you manage to get on to community radio?
So I loved college. I loved the experience of going to college. I suppose, as we said a little while ago, I didn't have the same struggles as some people have when they've been, you know, they're struggling with leaving home for the first time. I was mentioning earlier on as well about the summers being long and difficult and all that. And I suppose I was interested at the time in audio and recording, as I guess lots of us have been over the years. And somebody, a friend of the family, knew somebody who was involved in or setting up this new station in Dublin called Near FM, Northeast Access Radio, which is still going, and said, you know, Stuart, would you be interested in, you know, coming up and seeing them? And I said, absolutely. So I went up to Near FM and met the station manager. And I always remember, like, because I had some experience of kind of mixers and mics and all that kind of stuff. And she brought me in, and my first show, which was going to be live. And she said, Stuart, there you go. There's the CD players. It was a couple of CD players and tape decks, Toby. Remember those things?
Oh, yes.
Back in the day. And she said to me, there you go. If you need anything, there was a glass thing. She was out in the office. If you need anything, just put your hand up. I'll see you. Otherwise, good luck. And I remember thinking, fair. She just let it go live. And thankfully, it all worked. So I was doing that during the summer of 95, 96 and 97. And we played a lot of Take That. And of course, everybody was loving the Back for Good song, because I think Back for Good is one of the big Take That classics. I used to play that a lot on the show. I used to do this drive time show on a Friday evening. And the other thing that was interesting, Toby, about those days, midway through, I think in 2006, there was a change of management at the station, and new guy came in to run it. A very nice guy, but he was saying, Stuart, we'd like you to do a disability program. And, you know, because at the time I was, you know, I'm a lot younger. And I was like, no, I'm not doing a disability program. Just because I'm blind, I'm doing a music show. And I don't want to do a disability show. And he said, no, we really would like you to do a disability show, because you are the best part. You have a disability. And of course, now I see exactly where he was coming from. But I was like, no, it has to be. I don't want anyone to know. This is Drive Time with Stuart. So we played Take That, Back for Good, and lots of other songs. But they were happy days, and kind of, listen, you're going up. I remember my last show ever on Near FM, because I was going back to college, was the day before Princess Diana died. I distinctly remember, and there was two things that happened that weekend. Princess Diana died and U2 were playing in Dublin. And I always remember that.
And Dublin is obviously a great city. And as Mike Scott from the Waterboys once said, a city full of life. I've been to Dublin a couple of times, but only as a tourist. But I wondered what Dublin life is really actually like, because I think as tourists, we get a slightly different view of Dublin.
Well, I think any of us who go to any city probably get a different view. I mean, look, Dublin life, like anywhere over the last 18 months, has been very different. Dublin has been a very quiet place, is just recovering. It's become, I think, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, Dublin is expensive. It's busy, but there's still something nice about walking through Dublin, the raw kindness of strangers, and that I would hope, you know, tourists would find as well, that there is a genuine warmth, a genuine decency in people, which is great.
Whatever I said, whatever I did, I didn't mean it. I just want you back for good.
Want you back, want you back, want you back for good.
Whenever I'm wrong, just tell me the song and I'll sing it. You'll be right and understood.
Want you back.
Back for Good there by Take That, and a really good track that reminds you of college life and community radio station days too. We are staying with Take That a little bit now, because we're going to have a track by Robbie Williams. And Robbie has, of course, had a really great career and is a great performer and showman, and has been back in Take That a couple of times over the years as well. Stuart, you are a huge fan of Robbie Williams, I think. What is it about Robbie that makes him such a great performer and showman? Because I think you've seen him a couple of times in Dublin at the Point.
Yeah, I have, Toby. So I saw him twice in Dublin, actually once in the Phoenix Park, which is a big, it's just a big park, I suppose, here. Holds 200,000-odd people at a concert. And once in Croke Park, which is on the north side of Dublin. I think what makes Robbie Williams, and I remember hearing him first when he left Take That, and I think he did a cover of Freedom, George Michael's Freedom song, and he had that Old Before I Die, and I remember thinking, he's not a great singer. And then I realized he's an entertainer. And actually then he wrote some amazing stuff, and I started listening to some of the swing stuff he did, and like, he really is, he has an incredible range and quality in his voice, and can do lots of things with it, and can kind of adapt to lots of different genres, actually. So I do enjoy his music. I remember the concert, the first one I was at the Phoenix Park. We were there on a Saturday, and it was raining in the evening. It was August. It was very, very, very warm, but it was drizzly. And he was out on the stage, just with his guitar, and it was raining. And I remember you kind of thinking, it doesn't matter, it's raining. You're listening to Robbie Williams just with his guitar, with no band, no backing. And it was really good. And of course, Angels is a kind of a ballad, I suppose, of Robbie Williams, and a song that everyone, again, tries to sing at karaoke. I don't try to sing it, although I probably attempted it at some point. But it's, I suppose I could have picked so many Robbie Williams songs, no more than any of the other artists I've featured today, but it's a really nice song.
Yeah, because I think you say you may have tried to sing it once and found it quite a difficult song to sing. Is that because, you know, you say you have a sort of background in music. Did you train as a singer or at all?
No, gosh, I'm a piano player. No, I'm a keyboard player. It's just too high for me. And, you know, listen, people who know me well will sort of know that I like to hum along to things, but I am no singer. I'm very, very clear on that. I'm a keyboard player. I love working with singers. I'm an accompanist, but I'm not a singer.
And obviously, Angels is the track that you've chosen. And you, as a great fan of Robbie Williams, you could have chosen any other of his tracks. Why this particular one?
I think it's just because it was such a landmark song. I think it came out in 97, and it probably is the song that put him into the, like, it's a song, for example, that my mum is in her early, I was almost going to say mid 70s. If she heard that, she wouldn't like it. She's in her early 70s. She loved that song. you know, it's a song that kind of, I think, put him into, people go, oh, hang on, this guy's really good. So it was his maybe we call it his transition song.
I'm loving angels instead, and through it, oh, she offers me protection, a lot of love and affection, whether I'm right or wrong, and down the waterfall, wherever it may be.
Angels by Robbie Williams there, and I think for me, the track that possibly maybe really started or kick-started his solo career. We now come to a track off Ed Sheeran's new Equals album, and one that is dedicated to a couple of colleagues and friends who, Stuart, are sadly no longer with us. Stuart, would you mind sort of telling me a little bit about your two friends, and if it's, you know, sort of okay, yeah, to maybe chat about them? And
sure thing, Toby. Yeah, I mean, first of all, Ed Sheeran is a, like, he's an outstanding artist, and I have yet to see him live, and he's playing in Dublin next year, and I'm hoping that I might be able to rectify that at last. And I suppose I was thinking about Sheeran songs. I think when you sent me the email about potentially coming on this show, I hadn't heard the song we're about to play yet, and then I did hear it, and Visiting Hours is all about, because he wrote it about a friend of his, I think a mentor in Australia, who was a music producer, and it's all the things he's talking about. I wish I could, you know, see you. I wish I could go to heaven if there was visiting hours and ask your advice and all this sort of stuff. So I started thinking about this, and in 2017, I lost very suddenly a colleague and very good friend in my previous workplace. And literally he had a massive heart attack, or, you know, he passed away overnight.
Gosh.
And almost six months to the day later, another colleague of mine and very good friend, somebody who worked on my team at the time, one of our tech support officers, just collapsed and died. And I suppose Visiting Hours is like, I used to have, because you do, I think, when people die suddenly, you have these thoughts afterwards. Oh, my God, I'm never going to be able to tell them that, or there's something I meant to ask them that and now I can't. And the Visiting Hours song is, there's some beautiful lyrics in it. I mean, what I would say to everybody who's listening today, if you haven't heard this song, just listen to the lyrics, just like let yourself sit there for the 3 odd minutes it goes on, just stuff that he talks about. If I could, you know, go to heaven if there was visiting hours. And then, of course, the last verse he talks about, you know, I could ask if there was visiting hours, I'd ask them, could I take you home? And they'd say, no, it's for the best. So people come into our lives and they leave our lives and they, you know, leave a huge mark. And both those guys were people I would have rang frequently. And it's funny, Toby, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but you now we're so head up, aren't we? We're so connected to our mobile phones and contacts and messages from people who may no longer be with us. And there's this almost thing that I can't delete those messages, because you're almost deleting a part of that link you had with that person. So I think Visiting Hours is just an incredibly beautiful song.
And you say that it sort of made you sort of change your job in a way. Was that something that you thought, because I know, as you just mentioned now, you know, sort of things happen in our lives and sometimes it takes us down a different path, whether that's career or whether it's home life or anything else. I just wondered if that was a sort of, you know, for you, whether you've, you know, at that time losing somebody, thinking, okay,
yeah,
now's the time to do something, or...
Yeah, so that's pretty much exactly what happened. And I know if these deaths, sudden deaths, maybe hadn't happened at the time, I may not be talking to you now, because you and I mightn't have met through my current employment, you know, etc. So it would have been very different. It made me reshape. It made me think about what I wanted to do, what I was doing at the time, whether or not I maybe wanted to do something different, because the workplace was different without those two people there. And maybe in some respects, I lost a bit of my support network as well.
I wish that heaven had visiting hours, so I could just swing by and ask your advice. What would you do in my situation? I haven't a clue how I'd even raise them. What would you do?
Visiting Hours by Ed Sheeran there, and a very moving track indeed. So, Stuart, we now come to your final track, the one that you might like to pass on that might give people hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
Well, Toby, I thought we'd go all out on cheesy songs today. We've had a very somber, a very beautiful song there. But I thought we should do something a bit more upbeat. And I was being slated about this the other day by my partner. I'm a very big fan of the Lighthouse Family. And you may be shocked because it's funny because you say, oh, you did a music degree and you like all this kind of music. So the song we're going to play out with is the Lighthouse Family, High. And actually, there's loads of songs from the Lighthouse Family that we could have played. Again, they have a kind of a quirky, sort of different sound, I think. I always enjoyed them. Again, I remember hearing some of their songs very early on when they were starting, and they certainly were in my playlist on that, coming back to that old radio show again in the mid-90s in Dublin. But it's happy. It's, as they say, happy clappy. It's light. It's, and I suppose for me, I often stick on the Lighthouse Family if it's like, oh, you know, I just want a bit of easy music, you know, and maybe if I'm not feeling great or I just want something to bring me back up again. The Lighthouse Family, amongst others, but the Lighthouse Family definitely do it for me.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Stuart Lawler, for sharing your tracks of my life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, Toby. It's been a real pleasure to chat to you, and thank you for letting me relive some lovely memories.
When you're close to tears, remember someday it'll all be over. One day we're gonna get so old.